boy Shafty.
Take him out.
You're listening to 95.7 The Game, the morning roast.
Welcome back to the Roast here on a Thursday morning as we get ready for the Niners and Vikings. And as my daughter Chesna says, Papa, you watch too much football. You watch too much football. But guess what, Chesna?
No.
Guess what? It's going to be a lot of football for the next 5 months. A lot of football. Good morning to everybody out there getting out their graveyard shift, all the overnight dads. So it's good morning to you guys. Hopefully you had a good night. It's a grind out here in these streets. Cops, sheriffs, janitors, meeting drivers, BART conductors, all the teachers getting ready to teach these little students.
Firefighters.
Firefighters. Shout out to the firefighters.
You know what I got invited to do?
Matt, your boy Matt, Greg's son is a firefighter.
Yeah. Greg Sir. Yeah. Well, Matt Bichetto is also there, who's running for supervisor. Great guy.
Yep.
But we got asked, and I got asked.
Or you got asked?
To be an MC for a boxing night between cops and firefighters.
Oh, my gosh.
How awesome is that?
Oh, my gosh.
Rich Hunt, man. I'm telling you. Shout out Rich Hunt.
Wow. That would be something
else.
You
know, people want Danny to go up against his brother, John Finbar, because John Finbar is a firefighter. Danny's a cop. And their mother won't allow them to box each other.
Yeah, that's not good. We don't need to see
that. One of them doesn't want the smoke. I don't know which one.
We don't need to see that.
Danny was bending your ear last night.
He's funny ever. He can talk. Joining us on the River Island's guest line. We're all in the business of talking, but you know when somebody out-talks you, you're like, damn, that guy can talk, man.
I know. Please come. Irish Culture Center. Yeah. It's going to be in October. You'll be a guest of honor of mine.
Yeah, all right. I appreciate that.
All right.
I appreciate that. Dave Fleming, he's a guest of honor every week on the morning roast.
He really is.
You know, I know it's just a matter of time because the Giants tell him, I don't need you associated with these clowns. No, I'm kidding. Giants get a big win yesterday. They went 13-2. Fitzgerald, who's going to see him back at the top of the lineup for once. And then Blake Snell, 5 innings, doing his thing. Hayden Bursong today on the mound against the Brew Crew. Flip, what's happening, man? How you feeling, man, after that travel to the Plains? How about that?
I love going there, by the way. That everybody who loves football should go there sometime. It is such a cool place to go watch a game. Good win for the old Cal Bears. How about that? That was fun.
You know, Flip, I don't usually, you know, I don't say, oh, man, they're cheating. They're calling some bad stuff here. But it did feel like at one stretch Cal was holding on for dear life. And it felt like every single flag went against them. The roughing, the patting, the targeting call I thought was a little suspect. It was pretty weak. Oh, but the uniforms were sweet.
Those were incredible.
Even a Stafford guy like yourself, Flip, can admit that those Cal uniforms were pretty sweet.
That should be their permanent uniform, man. Maybe it is. I'm not that up on it. I haven't called over to Cal and said, let's talk about your uniform choices. But I agree. Those looked really good. Really good. I love the little blue stripe down the side of the pants. It's a good look for the Bears. And you know what? They have a pretty good team. Like, they have a chance to have – I saw the computers today – said, like, the ESPN computers said they have like a 5% chance to make the playoff, which, you know,
I'm not
like
mad at that.
5%, the fact that the computers are even looking at them is like, wouldn't that be something if they got themselves in the mix?
Well, Shasky, real quick, I'll let you get in here. San Diego State this Saturday, night game, that's going to be on ESPN. I'm not sure what Flip is calling, so we'll get that at the end of the interview. Did it go down to Florida State, Tallahassee? That's a winnable game. We saw Florida State. It did. Miami's coming out here October the 5th, the Hurricanes.
Last time they were out here, they played at Pac Bell.
That's right, the Emerald Bowl.
Well, you and I were both there.
We're at that game. Javon Best went crazy.
Look at you.
And then before that, I don't know if Fleming remembers this, but early 90s Miami came out here and played the Bruce Snyder-led Cal team, and they put it on the Cal Bears. So go ahead, Shasky, get in here.
Dave, Sunday, all right? Football was going on, so I don't know how many Giants fans were tapped in like I was, but I had my eye on the Giants, and a couple of days has gone on since then, and so the dust has settled, and I saw Luciano grab Fitz's hat and glove, and bring it out to him, and they clearly, like, I feel like everything is fine, but that play, it just didn't sit well with me that day, later on. And both guys, I thought, and there's a pop-up on Luciano's side. Fitz is coming over. He says he doesn't hear him. It is a loud environment. I like my second baseman or infielders to be a little more demonstrative. It's tough for even an infielder to see another guy's arm movements or hear them in that situation. They kind of collide. Ball drops. Matos is right there. No one's covering second base. Canna's falling asleep. Two runs score, and I'm listening to the post game, and both guys try to take some onus on it. And now that the dust is settled, what are your thoughts on the Luciano Fitz play, and is there any leftover residue? Because it feels like everyone's moved on.
Yeah, it was not a good look. It wasn't. And it happens. It happens a lot. Maybe not a lot, but it's not just those two. Stuff like that does happen. I didn't like, my least favorite part of the play was when the ball dropped, Everybody just stood there. Like, you gotta have some urgency. Okay, you screw it up, you miscommunicate, mm-hmm. the ball falls. Don't just stand there. Like, that was a sign of probably two things, immaturity and frustration. I think two things can be true. Number one, what I would have loved to have seen from Tyler Fitzgerald, who's clearly established himself as a leader on this team, as somebody who the Giants believe can be a part of the future. I would have loved to have seen Tyler after the game just say, my bad. Even if you don't believe that, be the bigger person there.
Yeah.
There's clearly some underlying frustration with not just Tyler, everybody, with Marco and the way he's played defensively this year. And I think my guess would be is there was like a cumulative effect of not again, sort of like that feeling like, man, just making it hard on everybody out there. But, but Marco is still so young and doesn't speak English the way that Tyler does and most of these Giants do, and it's harder for him to, like, all that stuff makes it a little unfair in these scenarios where you're going after the game and sticking a microphone in two players. One is more equipped to explain himself and defend himself than the other is. I would have loved to have seen Tyler just take it, yeah. And I think next time he will. I think he probably believes the same thing. So move on and hope it doesn't happen again.
Yeah, when in doubt, take the high road. Talking to Dave Fleming here on the River Islands guest line. I don't think we've talked to you since Matt Chapman re-upped with the Giants. A 6-year, $151 million deal. I know Shasky loves Chapman. I've been very impressed with his professionalism, with how hard he plays. And you know what? The years, we could nitpick and say, 6 years, no trade clause, $151 million. But you know what? He's been a really good Giant, and you have to start somewhere. You have to start building pillars here, and that's not a bad guy to have in his dugout for the next 5 to 6 years, Flem. Congrats to Matt Chapman, but what were your thoughts on the contract extension that he signed last week?
Yeah, I think championship-caliber teams don't nitpick and look at I don't look at it that way. They look at, this guy's a really good player. He wants to be here. He makes our team better, period. He's on our team. Like, make it happen. And I think that was what the Giants did in this instance, as opposed to obsessing over maybe the marginal value of every aspect of the deal. Just say, this guy loves being here. He's had a great year, and we want him here to be an anchor on this team. And so I'm thrilled. I haven't told this to Matt, but I feel like he owes me a little something because I have spent the whole year just pumping him up.
You have. Willie Mack Award winner.
Oh, my gosh.
He's probably running away with that one.
He's so impressed me. Like, I really, and I think I said it to you guys a few weeks ago that I thought, or maybe, I don't know, maybe it was Kalakami, Joe's friend, that I was talking to, that I said I thought he was the best Giants defensive player that I'd seen. And I got asked about that a lot. Like, wow, you really think that? And I was like, well, I got to call Brandon Crawford now and, we'll walk him off the ledge. I love Craw. But I just been to all, that's a rambling way to say, I think Matt Chapman has been fantastic, and I'm so happy he's going to be a part of this team. It's really important to have him around.
You know, Joe, I was wondering why Tim Kawakami stiffed me the other night at Levi's Stadium for Monday Night Football. He just walked right past me, didn't say a word to me. I thought you guys were buddies,
oh,
man.
Oh, my God.
Oh, hey, look, thanks for the shot. No, that was great. Hey, you know what, though? I'm with you on Chap. I'm sorry. Look. We can nitpick all these different things. He's a good player. He makes them better. I want him leading the charge for a lot of these young players who you reference Fitz and Luciano. Whether these guys are in the Cards long term or not, you got to have like a David Lee type to kind of just set the tone. You need those people in the building, and you need those guys on the field, and he's one of those guys. To me, this is a lot about Bob Melvin, and maybe I'm reading too deep into this, but I know Bob loves Matt Chapman, and I feel like Bob's got a lot of influence right now, and he said something that I found to be really interesting. He was talking about the outfield, and man, we got a lot of things to consider, and at some point, they asked him about, you know, the year as a whole, and he's like, this has been one of the hardest years of my career. I'm thinking, wow, like I know you want to win, and what do you think he meant by saying it's the hardest part of his career, or why do you think it's been the hardest part of his career?
I think because he put so much, like, it's hard to overstate how much it means to Bob to be the Giants manager. You know, for the kid, he always describes it, and he makes me smile when he says it. Like he got on his bike when he was 12 years old and just rode up and down the street thinking he might see Willie Mays coming back from the game in his neighborhood. Like, for Bob, this job is the culmination of his whole career. So I think, you know, when the Giants went out and they signed all these players and you bring Bob in, his expectation 100% was this is a playoff team. And the fact that it's not going to be a playoff team has really eaten at him. So I think that's what he means, as opposed to internal strife or other stuff. I think it's more just like the expectation of this job and what it means to him and how he feels like they've come up short. And I think he's very determined to help make sure that doesn't happen again.
What do you think has been the biggest development positively this year for the San Francisco Giants? Because I've got a few on my head, but you're with the team every day. And you know people aren't happy, whatever, but there are some positives. Like, what's the most positive thing to come out of this year?
There have been positives. It's been a disappointing year with a lot of things that have been positive. But I would say the collection of younger players and the guys, and I'll say that of, like, not, I'm not putting Kyle Harrison in that bin. I'm not even putting, like, Matos had a great run. It's still sort of up in the air what he's going to offer. I'm not putting Patrick Bailey. I'm saying Ramos, Fitzgerald, and Birdsong specifically. And then some of the bullpen guys, too. Like, I think you said it a minute ago. It doesn't have to be that those guys are future superstars. It doesn't have to be. But, like, that's almost like those guys were not being counted on at all. And you found a way to accentuate the positive with them. And what I think the Giants haven't done a great job of over the last many years with their young players is finding what they do well and accentuating that, as opposed to maybe like trying to change certain things about them or pigeonhole them. And I love the fact that Ramos, Fitzgerald, especially, like, they're not the prototype sort of Farhan players in terms of their profile. They've let them play and they've let them thrive. And I think that's, you know, are those guys going to be your all-stars going forward? I mean, Ramos has already made an all-star team, maybe. But can they be solid parts of the Giants' future and help you make a better franchise? Absolutely they can. And I think that, to me, that's been the biggest positive. Those guys from sort of totally off the radar to having really good years.
Dave Fleming here on the Morning Rolls. Joins us every single week, courtesy of the River Islands guest line. Farhan Zaidi, he's been a hot-button topic here in the Bay Area for quite some time now, and obviously you've heard our show. We've been very critical of Farhan Zaidi. He's done some good things. I don't want to say everything's been doom and gloom. He's done some really good things. And then there's some things that's been left on the table here. Flem, you're around this team, and I don't want you to speak for Farhan or anything like that, but what do you think Farhan would say about the job he's done this season? Not in the totality, because I think the farm could be in a better spot. He's been able to bring premium pitchers to the Bay Area, but what do you think Farhan would say about this team and the job he's done this season?
Well, I'll say, before I answer, I'll say I talked to him the other day, and man, this has worn on him big time. Like, I walked away going, I hope he's all right. Like, he is wearing it big time. And it was a reminder for me that all these things that you and I talk about and yep. We throw around, like, these people who are involved pour their whole selves into this. And, look, they get paid extremely well, and they accept the challenge. They know what's coming. They know that that's part of the deal, but it doesn't make it easier. And he is just, this year has worn him out. I think he's just super, super, super disappointed with how things have gone. And so, you know, that doesn't answer your question. I think he would say he's really unhappy and things need to be different. And I think the thing that most probably has frustrated him, the thing that he brought up first when I was chatting with him was like, there are a bunch of the veteran players that they were counting on, whether it's, you know, Wilmer and Tyro or who, like, that's not finger pointing at them, but like they've gotten a lot of underperformance from guys. They were just figuring we're going to be solid, solid guys. And I think he felt like that undermined the whole beginning of the year, and they've been playing catch up and they've never been able to get their footing, and that the whole thing sort of got torpedoed before it could get going. And I think that really disappoints him. You know, when you load up like you do in the off season, like the Giants did, and then you get off to such a poor start, it throws everybody out of whack. And I don't think the Giants ever got their balance.
Yeah. You know, Dave, we're going to have a conversation about just like what an organization maybe owes its fans, right? The consumer, and you owe it to yourself, obviously, because you're trying to win. This is a business, and these, you're trying to win championships and whatnot. But there's a lot of Niner fans that are really ticked off about maybe the candor of Shanahan and the Niners disclosing the McCaffrey injury and how they waited. And I know there's a fantasy element that's baked into this. Bonte has, he learns things about the Warriors and he doesn't bring all of it to air. And there's, you know, like a tug and pull of like, how much do I let everyone know that I know? And I don't want to betray trusts.
Flim's in that same spot. But that's Flim's in that same spot. Yep.
And that's why I want to ask him, like, as someone who works for these teams, how difficult is it for the teams to be 100% candid while also not, you know, giving up that gamesmanship for the other teams that you're going up against? Like, do you get where I'm going with this? Like, I think it's really difficult, and I understand why fans get angry, but I also see where the teams fall down on this. So when there's like an injury, how honest can they be?
Yeah, it's a hard thing. And I actually, I think Farhan, just specifically Farhan, is one of the most, when you guys, like, you know, I don't know if he maybe he only goes on the other station or whatever. I don't know what his deal is, but like when you listen to him talk, and he doesn't talk that often, and I wish he talked more. I think one thing, you know, that I've said to Farhan is like, you know, I think it would benefit him to be out there a little more, just communicate a little more with Giants fans. Cause they are desperate to hear from your leadership. Like, fans care. They want to hear from these guys. But they also, like, to your point, they want to hear the truth. And I think Farhan is really good at that. Like, Farhan speaks the truth. When he says something, don't think he's, like, dodging you or sending you down the wrong path. He means what he says, like, as much as any sports executive that I've been around. So I think he's actually pretty forthcoming about how he feels and how players are doing. It's always going to be a tricky balance, always. It's tougher in football. You know, I think football is probably the ultimate one where, you know, game planning and things change based on one player being in there, and there's so much on every single game. But, yeah, that was a bad look for the Niners. Like, and you know, I feel terrible for the kid, Jordan Mason, who played so well. And now I'm sure, you know, I'm sure he's feeling the heat about, because his comment is the one that really set it all off. Hey, I knew Friday, or I found out Friday I was starting. Like, you know, that, like, that's the whole key to the whole thing. And I feel terrible for him because he should be celebrated for how great he played. It's a hard part of this whole thing.
Nah, there's no doubt about that. Flim, where are you at this week? Are you going to be doing Cal, San Diego State? You're going to stay local? What's on deck this weekend in terms of college football?
Yep, I'm bringing my fast track and I'm driving across the Bay Bridge. That's my my gig Saturday night.
I love that. It's a good game too. And by the way, four new teams going to the Pac-12. Maybe Cal and Stafford will be back in the Pac-12 one day. No, seriously, we got six teams now. Flim, what's your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I mean, well, and the one San Diego State that we have this weekend, that's pretty big news. Like, they're one of those teams. I mean, I thought the Pac-12, the old Pac-12, it's mind-boggling how badly they screwed all this up. Like, it's just like there will be case studies on. You want to know how you ruin an organization? Do what this group did. And so, like, if they'd just done this a while ago, because these schools, those schools are good programs. And I actually personally think for Cal and Stanford, I know the money might not equal out long term, but short term it probably would. If Cal and Stanford with Oregon State and Washington State and San Diego State and Boise State and Fresno State, I think that's better than what they've got going now. Yeah, better for everybody. Yep. More healthy. Mm-hmm. Just a better thing. But I don't think they can unspool. Now they've committed to the ACC. I don't know how that happens. So who knows? But I'm glad for, because I'm really pulling for those programs that are left out here to survive. I think it's good news. I don't know what the next step is, but I think it's short term. It's a good positive step.
Absolutely. Have a good call tonight.
Thanks, Glenn. Dave.
Thank you. Some birdsong. Let's see if he can bounce back, man, and finish his season strong. Thanks so much, Flynn. Have a great call Saturday night. We'll be listening to Cal and San Diego State this Saturday. In the meantime, of course, Giants baseball. Thanks, Flynn. We'll talk to you next week.
Who thought that I was going to be the voice of the Golden Bears? Their fans are probably just like, can we please get somebody else over here?
No, they love you. You're a good luck charm for them. You went down to the Plains. Got a win in Auburn. Come on now.
Somewhere,
SEC what? That's Bear territory, Flint.
Somewhere Roxy Bernstein's going, please explain.
Yeah, yeah. He's got a dartboard with my face in the middle of it.
See you, buddy.
See you guys.
All right, Dave Flynn, the Kansas River Islands guest line, 95-70 game.
Let me ask you the same question I asked him, essentially. What do the 49ers owe their fans when it comes to disclosing these injuries? I'm not outraged. I understand there's a gambling element. I understand there's a fantasy football element. There's a gamesmanship element, right, of games planning and all that. I'm just curious what is reasonable to expect. I don't expect, and maybe I'm too deep in the weeds, for people at podiums to give me 100% of the truth 100% of the time.
I don't think in terms of injuries, disclosing injuries, because it's a personal thing, and you know, we got the whole HIPAA laws, right? We got all that. But I understand a football team not disclosing their information. You know, because one, if you do disclose it, you're gonna freak the fan base out. Like, say if Shanahan went up there last week to the podium, last Wednesday, and he comes out, Shasky goes, you know, Shasky, Chris is dealing with a calf strain. He's got Achilles tendonitis. This is not an easy injury, blah, 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 blah. Joe Shasky's going to walk out of that presser like, oh, damn, Chris is ruined. Now, that's the case right now. A lot of people are thinking doom and gloom with Christian. But some of it is like, hey, we don't want to freak you out, right? And I think that's very small on the scale. But the biggest thing is gamesmanship. Not disclosing anything to your team, and really keeping it out of the public eye so everybody will bring the noise about, oh, Christian, he can't play this, we can't play that, because there's going to be somebody, if Christian does play, there's going to be fans who say, he shouldn't be playing, you're risking his career, he's got Achilles tendonitis, he needs to just sit it out. Mm. There's somebody out there. They're not loud about it, but there's somebody who are thinking that. So to answer the question in a long-winded way, I don't think they owe us anything when it comes to injuries and disclosing that. I don't think they owe us a damn thing.
What about the gambling element? I'm not a gambler, and I'm not trying to talk like on something I don't know. Let's pick it up on the other side, because
because the gambling element is interesting, and I don't think they owe the gamblers anything either.
But doesn't the league have some responsibility to be somewhat forthright?
They put it on the injury report, questionable. Achilles and calf.
Okay.
And the gamblers have to take it from there. But I don't think Shanahan and the Niners, or any coach for that matter, he can't be consumed with gambling aspect, because now you're getting into some deeper things. Now you're getting into Pete Rose territory where, oh, yeah, well, the gambling, we can bounce the spread, and we're going to put this and this, and, oh, by the swing game day, then you can face big-time fines. Didn't the Falcons get fined last year for the Bijan Robinson situation? Mm-hmm. He doesn't play the game. They didn't disclose an injury. They got a fat fine. So let's pick it up on the other side, because it's a very interesting conversation. What's coming up in the game? Sponsored by Downtown Los Altos Winestro, 888-957-9570. Fans, do teams owe you anything when it comes to disclosing injuries? Do you feel cheated out of the Christian McCaffrey situation? Let's discuss it here on The Roast. Stroll through beautiful downtown Los Altos while enjoying a variety of local wines and live music at the Downtown Wine Stroll Friday, September 20th at 6 p.m. I need to make this happen one day. Sponsored by State Street Market and Matts and Fine Art Gallery. Tickets and info at downtownlosaltos.org.
Receivers left and right. Favre out of the shotgun. Chester to his right. Third down. 12 seconds to go in the game. Niners lead by four. Favre back to pass. Pumps to the left. 8 seconds left. He gets away from the pressure. Fires to the end zone. It's caught. It's Greg Lewis. Touchdown. Oh, my heavens. Greg Lewis. Welcome to Minnesota. Oh, my heavens. Greg Lewis's first catch has given the Minnesota Vikings an improbable victory. No flags on the field. Brett Favre, Greg Lewis. How do you like that?
Now, back to the Morning Roast with Vontae and Shasky.
Paul Allen.
It's a great call.
Vikings Radio Network.
It's a great call.
Brett Favre.
I hate
Greg
him.
Lewis. Oh, man. September 27, 2009. Niners dropped to 2-1 on the season. They had a chance to go 3-0. The next week, they beat the Rams, and then, of course, that was the infamous Falcons game when Singletary huddled everybody up on the field during the timeout, thought they were going to rally, and no, Roddy Wright goes like 90 to 6. It's just a disaster.
Greg Lewis had 152 catches. 152 catches. And eight touchdowns in his career. And that was the one. And he got an ESPY for best play of the year.
Unbelievable. Look at these. Brett Favre, 24-46, 301, two touchdowns, a pick. Adrian Peterson, 19 carries, 85 yards. Chester Taylor, a factor in the pass game, 7 catches, 70 yards. Percy Harvin, 4 for 51.
Percy Harvin.
Sidney Rice, 4 for 56.
Sidney Rice, South Carolina.
One touchdown.
Look at us.
Remember this guy? Vicente Shenko.
Oh, yeah.
The tight end.
Vicente Shenko, yeah.
Vicente Shenko.
It's an all-time name.
All-time name.
You say Bernard that, Berrien. I say Vicica Hema.
Vicica Hema hit the goalpost, yeah. Boxing. Old Philadelphia Eagle. Matt knows him very, very well. Very, very well. By the way, before we get back into our question and our show, we were talking about the O Club and Fight Night. It was all great. And hopefully David E. House is thinking about a plan B in his life. No, he's 26 years old, living on his mama's couch.
Oh,
David
bro,
E. House. He's a roaster. But we gotta make some things happen in life, buddy. Can't be roasting all your life, if you know what I mean. Shout out to the knee houses. They were great. Everybody was out there. Great.
People.
Great cool. Great
and
crew.
We're giving you smack. We're just talking smack.
Yeah, I know. He does it. But I gotta say one guy that I'm going to talk smack to.
Who's that?
And I don't know if I'm gonna take it back. It's our boy Mikey Williams.
Who's
and Mike
your boy?
Williams.
He loves you.
No, he doesn't love me. He loves to try to beat me in everything, and he fails at it over and over and over again. So we're in the college pickle pool together, and he comes to the Olympic Club. Mike Williams, you know him.
Yeah.
And whenever you ran into him before I did yesterday.
Yeah. Talked my ear off.
And then he sent the selfie.
I did the George Carlin. Like, I got to go that way, dude.
Right.
I have somewhere to be.
And then he sends this intense selfie, and he's got the George Jefferson head. I mean, Mikey Williams, just let it go, baby.
That's
I love
fair.
You.
That's
just
fair.
Just let it go, Mikey Williams. You know, we're not coming up to near through the east side, right? Wait, come on, man. You got the George Jefferson going on. So Mikey Williams is just, he's one of a kind. But everybody says, Mike Williams is a lot. Is a lot. Well, and he is a lot. But we love him.
So let's pivot back into the Niners. So you and I are at the game, and like everybody, we find out, oh, my God, like an hour before the game, what CMC's not going to play? And look, that happens, right? There are people that are game-time decisions. That happens in any sport across the board. And then Jordan Mason, at the end of the game, says, you know, I kind of found out Friday, but he was a little overwhelmed, and everyone's losing their minds because, oh, if the Niners knew Friday, they have to disclose that and this and the other. And I see so many different responses to this. And I don't gamble, right? So maybe I'm not the right vehicle to have this conversation. I want to hear from people who feel passionate one way or the other. But I get a text like this. Because the NFL embraces daily fantasy and wagering, yes, I feel like they owe me, as someone who buys into their business model. They created this. They owe me more transparency. But I also understand, like, hey, there's a gamesmanship aspect to this that I kind of feel like they don't owe anyone anything.
Wow. 650, interesting. There should be an investigation to see if anyone plays big bets on CMC unders. Now, I'm not going to read the rest of it, but that is very interesting to know if there were some big bets made on a Friday or a Saturday on CMC prop bets. But it doesn't, it impacts everything, fantasy, and it's the Monday night game. So a lot of people have CMC that probably don't have Jordan Mason as the backup, and they're scrambling for a replacement during their fantasy matchups. So some people do feel old to it. But I understand the team's position.
For sure.
Protecting the player, protecting the team's psyche, and the players. The most important thing about this whole thing, the most important part is the team knows what's going on with Chris McCaffrey. The players on the team know what's going on with Chris McCaffrey. The front office, they all know what's going on with Chris McCaffrey. And that, to me, is the only people who should know what's going on with Christian McCaffrey. For what we know, he's got a calf strain and an Achilles. He's got Achilles tendonitis. That, to me, is serious enough to know that, boy, this may be a long-term injury. But do they owe us and owe the fans anything to disclose entire injury? I can't subscribe to that.
Well, like, okay, remember when Jimmy was in that playoff run and come to find out he had, like, a hurt shoulder the entire time? Yeah. I mean, it kind of would have been nice to know that, wouldn't it have been?
I mean,
if you're good, because here it's not the team. See, to me, it's not on the team. It's the league itself. Like, if you're going to take all the gambling money and you're going to provide all the lines and all that stuff, because, you know, they're all in bed with these companies. There is some level of accountability that has to be had. But I don't think the team necessarily should be held over. This is more of a league issue.
But if we know that Jimmy has a shoulder injury, right? The other team knows he has a shoulder injury. Think about the Packers game. This is a perfect example, actually, I think it is. Deebo has a shoulder injury against the Cleveland Browns. The playoff game. Didn't it look like Jair Alexander was targeting that same area with the shoulder injury?
Especially after I saw the receiver, Doc, the way he hit it. It was like, ooh, yeah. And like they were all like, oh, yeah, that was the spot to hit.
That was the spot.
100%.
So if 100%. It's disclosed about Jimmy Garoppolo during that playoff run, those other teams are like, we're targeting that shoulder. We'll put the bullseye on that shoulder. And at times, you can't protect that shoulder, and then you lose your quarterback. We hear it all the time, especially in football and a little bit in hockey as well. We always hear about, oh, that guy was playing with a broken collarbone. Oh, that guy was playing with no cartilage in his knee. You have to protect the player, and you have to protect your team. So I'm in the mindset of they don't owe us a damn thing when it comes to disclosing injuries.
Well, it's interesting because like I feel similar to you, and I feel like this whole thing is not that it's blown out of proportion because I get the gambling aspect of it, but as a non-gambler, to me, it's like I'm not moved one way or the other. But like Sam, I don't think Sam gambles. Sam, you were like, no, I don't like when my team lies to me.
Well, hold on real quick.
And I'm like, I don't know if it's lying.
As a resident gambler, I dibble and dabble.
Yeah.
No one, I look at the injury reports. This is why when people make bets on the Tuesday or Wednesday, I'm like, why? I'm waiting until 9 o'clock when the inactives are out, number one. And then the injury reports. And I'm monitoring it every single day. I'm reading every piece of information. Was he limited? Did he not partake? Is he doubtful? Is he probable? Is he questionable? Now there's no probable. It's just questionable, doubtful, and out. So that's on the gambler to be paying attention to what the hell's going on. That week said, oh, there's a chance Christian may not play. So therefore, I'm going to back up off the bet. And that's on the gambler. I put that on the gambler for not paying attention to seeing what's going on during that week with the team and what they're doing with the players. But Sam's mad about it?
Well, he was mad is not the right word. Sam, I don't want to speak for you, but you were pretty heated this morning when you and I were discussing this.
Well, no, I mean, not super heated. It's more just like how what was I saying this morning. It's more my thing was, why do we care whether or not these people are going to be playing? These players are going to play or not? For the most part, like you said, I want my team to win. And obviously, if that's the case, you'll find out, you know, before the game when Christian McCaffrey takes the field. Oh, he's playing good. That's going to help our team's chances. But for most people, they want to know simply because, like we said, fantasy and gambling aspects of it. And so in my point of view, yeah, I don't really gamble, so that doesn't really impact me. And I know from the team standpoint, like, the teams don't care if you have money on this game. That doesn't impact them or not. So they don't really need to be transparent in that sense of the word.
Like, I always go back to, like, bullpens. Like, we never hear about a bullpen arm being sore or not being available on a given day till after the game. Sean Estes was going on this rant about going to this closer as opposed to that closer. And I agreed with him. And I was like, yeah, I feel the same way. And then what happens in postgame? Bob Melvin's like, yeah, that guy couldn't pitch today.
Yep.
And it was like, no, well, that renders everything moot.
Well, and what Sam was saying with fantasy and gambling, those things are so intertwined now, I consider them the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
Like, fantasy and gambling is the same
thing. You think they're the same?
They're the exact, like, yes. Right. I don't know anyone, unless you're, like, a 10-year-old and you're in a fun league, like, no one, more than 85 or 90% is all paid or you're trying to get money fantasy.
So 510 makes a great point here.
What's that?
CMC bets usually get refunded and voided if he does not play. So if you did bet an over or under on a CMC prop bet, you did get refunded because he didn't take a single snap. That's part of gambling. So you get your money back. I want to clear something up, too, with the 831. Weren't you guys saying that Wiggins owed an explanation to the fans when he was gone for personal reasons? Shasky and I, Lutman and Spadoni and I did not say he owed anybody an explanation. Those words did not come out of our mouth. We asked a question on whether or not fans wanted to hear from Andrew Wiggins. That's what we asked. But we did not believe that Andrew Wiggins owed an explanation dealing with personal issues. So don't put that out there. Just wanted to clear that up because
I'm buying stock in Andrew Wiggins.
That was a very sensitive subject around here. Well,
and this is an interesting, you know, little thing. And 415, 99% of the public didn't know he was going to play. But there is that 1% that has, you know, the inside information.
Right.
And that makes it a problem. See, it's hard for me to understand the dynamics of it. So you're shaking your head like,
well, no.
Isn't there always going to be inside information?
There's always going to be inside information. But a lot of the people around the media, like if somebody in the media, nobody was reporting Friday, oh, there's a chance Christian McCaffrey's not going to play. We just assume that, okay, it's day-to-day, he's practicing, he's questionable, but it sounds like he's going to play.
But he's also not Monday, the first or last 49er
right.
that I've seen be game-time decision and not play.
Yeah.
I mean, my whole life, whether I've been in fantasy or not, there's been guys like, he's going to test out his ankle pregame or whatever, and either he plays or he doesn't play.
We'll get to Edgar real quick in a second here. Edgar, hang tight, Edgar, I want to get this point out. But like last year, Minnesota. Brock Purdy supposedly suffered a concussion, or he did, right?
Yeah.
And then he got cleared that Friday without practicing. Now, they cleared him, and they didn't tell us the severity of the concussion, but as a gambler, there was no way I was betting on Brock Purdy that Sunday on a short week against Cincinnati, coming off a bye week, knowing that he's had concussion symptoms. Things are getting a little weird. And then you don't have Trent Williams and Deebo Samuel, so I don't care if they disclosed it or not. I saw with my own two eyes, Brock Purdy got rocked. And he's not playing well without Deebo and Trent Williams.
Well, it's interesting because, like, he was listed as doubtful for weeks on end.
Right.
And on the injury report. I know Belichick for years, Tom Brady, shoulder.
Yep.
Every week for years on end, almost to cover himself.
Well, football players, I mean, they got bounties out there. You remember Greg Williams, everybody?
It was Frank Gore they were talking about.
Yeah, it was just not even Greg Williams. Bounties, I heard bounties happening to high school guys in the triple. There'd be fans betting, watching Galileo games, side bets. My boy's going to knock your boy out the game, man. I got 500 on it right now. Like, bounties. And then they look at that player, hey, I got 500 on this. And that player's like, oh, I'm going to get a little cut of that. It happens in football. Yeah, they see the injuries and stuff, so that's why you gotta fake the fuck. Tom Brady may have a knee injury, but I'm going to put shoulder.
Yeah.
You know, I'm going to dupe people into knowing that. And then now, obviously, when you play, those teams will see, like, oh, it's not the shoulder that's bothering. It may be the knee. It may be the ankle. So they figure it out pretty quickly.
It's just whenever I buy a ticket, and again, this is not gambling, but when I buy a ticket, I know there's a lot of unknowns. Guy could leave a game in a minute in. Yep. Like, for example, think of the game Clay and Draymond got ejected before the game even started.
Yeah.
It was like, 40 seconds into the game?
A minute and a half into the game.
Okay, whether you bought a ticket or you gambled, you didn't know that was going to happen.
Right.
So I do believe there's an element of chaos, just when it comes to sports, and it's kind of baked into the equation. Yeah. So I more than anything, and Dave Fleming hit on this, I feel bad that Jordan Mason's unbelievable moment is robbed because, and I know we're talking about it, and I'm just asking fans how they feel about it. Like, it just sucks that we're parsing together this young man's words, mm-hmm. and we're looking to do the, gotcha, because there is a lot of money involved in all of this, and people are gambling significant amounts. And when the leagues take the money and it's this transparent, people are asking, where's the accountability? And I'm asking, should there even be any accountability?
Yeah. Well, let's go to Edgar and Fresno. Edgar and Fresno, what's happening, man? What do you think about that?
Hey, how's it going, man? Honestly, I think they're blowing this way out of proportion, and they didn't ask him if he knew whether or not Christian McCaffrey was going to play. They asked him if he knew or when he knew he was starting. You know, teams typically don't disclose who's going to start. They just let us know who's playing, as far as I know.
So you think this situation's blown out of proportion?
Yeah, I think that maybe they were going to start
Jordan Mason.
Yeah, Jordan, maybe they were going to start Jordan Mason, you know, the whole time, and then whether or not Christian McCaffrey played was kind of like a day-to-day thing.
I hear you. I hear you. Yeah, I my conclusion is, I don't think the teams owe anybody anything.
Yeah, I'm gambling. Agree with that.
They say 1-800-GAMBLER, right? If you're addicted, call that 1-800-GAMBLER. Well, gamble at your own risk.
Well, that's
gamble at your own risk. For nobody to, you know, you have a choice. You have a choice to make.
I think it's easier said than done.
No, there trust is, me. I know. A, I know.
psychological aspect, no an doubt. Emotional aspect to this.
No, trust me. I know. I know. Which is why sometimes I take a play off. I'll take months off of gambling. No joke. Just leave it alone. Leave it alone. Also, I have a rule, never bet week one, because you never know what these teams are going to look
never?
Like. I don't bet week one.
You've never bet
week one? I have bet a week one, but, you know, typically I'd stay away from week ones.
What's your best bet of all time?
I don't know. I don't know. I've had a lot of good bets. A lot of good bets. A lot of bad bets.
My best bet ever, I had 4 years ago, like halfway through the season, I had Chiefs-Niners Super Bowl matchup. That was it. Not to win, just for them to meet in the,
wow.
the Super Bowl. That, I
that's
made
pretty good.
A lot of cash. Lost a lot of it after that, too, but we don't talk about that.
Yeah, we don't talk about the losses. We don't talk about the losses. You know what? You know what's a good bet?
Talk about the losses. Please save that.
We don't talk about the losses. Pick Dog and I had a bet. We're betting on the Panthers one playoff run. Steve Smith's coming out party. And we were betting the quarters. The quarters of the game. We had a good run with them and the Pittsburgh Steelers. So they were hitting quarterbacks. That felt good. That felt really good. I'll tell you the best bet that we didn't make was when West Virginia and Pat White and Rich Rodriguez were in the Sugar Bowl against Georgia. We threw a lot of money on Georgia.
Slayton?
Slayton.
Steve Slayton?
The bet didn't go in. And West Virginia was up 21-0 at the first quarter. We're like, oh, boy, we've dodged a bullet. And Georgia ended up losing.
You know, we played some Peyton Manning sound earlier today where he has the Manning cast, and Belichick's obviously on that. And it's a great show. But did you know that year over year, Manning cast is down 42% in terms of viewers?
That doesn't surprise me.
Why do you say that?
Because we're still conditioned to listen to the natural broadcast of a football game. Because when you're watching a Manning cast, it's hard. It's difficult for me. I'll speak for myself. You lock it in on the game, but I also want to lock in on what Manning is saying about the game.
Yeah.
So you don't really pay attention to the game as much as you do to the Mannings breaking down what they're seeing. And so you can always go back and listen to the highlights of the Manning casts. But Buck and Aikman are so good, and that we're just a creature of listening to the natural broadcast, that it's a fun thing. Wow, many casts. This is awesome. But I find myself watching Buck and Aikman all the time.
If it was the Amazon Prime, like if the game was on Amazon Prime and it wasn't Buck and Aikman, don't you think viewership would be better?
A little better.
Right?
Yeah.
And I'm using Amazon Prime as an example. When it was Booger and who were the other guys that were involved
Booger,
in that?
Joe Tessitore.
Joe Tessitore.
Jason Witten.
Jason Witten.
I mean, let's call it what it is. I mean, like, I'm flipping on Eli and Peyton. But but Joe Buck and Aikman are so good that I think, and they feel big time.
Right.
Once you hit to that channel, I'm not changing it. That's just me.
Yeah, no, I'm with you. That doesn't surprise me at all. We can go back to the 49ers in just a second, but I do want to ask you this. since you're talking about the best bet or your worst bet or whatnot, we do Walking Back Wednesdays. We have some bad takes. We have good takes. Sometimes we wish that we didn't press in on a take.
Okay.
When it comes to social media, what is the one thing you all regret when it comes to pressing send?
Oh, no.
Ooh. What is one tweet that you wish you had back? Or maybe it's an Instagram picture.
Mm.
Or maybe it's an IG live like Shannon Sharp.
Oh, boy. Why? What happened with Shannon Sharp?
Oh.
Stop!
Spinotti, you want to take this
Stop
away?
It.
Wow. I love how the television expert was like, Spadoni, do you want to take this one?
Yeah, I'll take over, Bonte. Joe Spadoni here, pregame show, 95.7 The Game. So, as you know, we butt dial at times, right, guys?
Right.
Yeah.
But have you ever butt dialed an IG live?
No.
Ever done that in your life?
No.
Well, Shannon Sharp did that. And he was in his bed at the time. And, it sounded like he was with someone else. And this IG Live went on for, well, some call it long, some call it short.
Was it Marcus and Richmond long?
I think it was even shorter than that, 11 minutes.
Marcus and Richmond would be
Makes
proud.
Makes me feel better about myself because Shannon's in great shape.
Shannon didn't seem to care. He addressed it last night, by the way.
Just great shape.
He didn't care.
No. Should he?
I mean, you know what?
So he was getting it on IG
But you
Live.
Couldn't see anything. You just see audio only. It was the bedpost or side of the bed. He put the phone down and it hit IG Live.
Do you think he regrets that, though?
Honestly, the Q rating's up, right? As well as other things.
Oh, my God.
That's why I left Spadoni taking it
Five.
Away.
My God.
That's why I left Spadoni taking
oh
it away.
Oh, my God. Oh, the goo.
First of all, Shaxi, to your point, I did feel better about myself.
Hell yeah. I was like, bro, that guy got, he doesn't even have a 10-pack or a 16-pack. Right. That fool has, you could see every muscle on that guy's body. He is shredded. Honestly,
I had problems with my endurance.
Bonte, he might be one of the most shredded men on the planet.
I know.
He's unreal, right? Whatever he's on, I want it.
I was on air when, not on air. I was watching Power, and Tariq is sleeping with this girl, one of the villain's daughters, and she goes, that was a cool 8. Next time, can you give me a solid 10? And I was like, man, that'd be like an hour for me, right? I mean, I don't think he regrets it at all. If he addressed it last night with Chad Ochocinco, then it is what it is. But do you regret? I wonder if he's going to ever regret hitting send on that. Like, there's tweets I regret hitting send. One tweet I remember sent to a group thread. I was like, oh, wrong thread. Sorry.
Oh, well, yeah.
Well, we have sound from Shannon Sharp addressing this last night on his podcast. Was it Club Shay Shay?
Yeah, yeah.
Club Shay Shay.
Alongside Chad Ochocinco.
It was me being a healthy, active male. I mean, y'all thought I was bull jiving. Hey, I'm going to get it in. Real talk. Hey, yo.
I'll get it in. Hey, Ocho, I'll get it in. We can't play any of that sound, right? We got to stay away from that.
I'm not going to sugarcoat it. I sit here and do a sugarcoat job.
I'm trying to wrap my head around something that I regret.
Hold on, real quick.
Yes.
Before do you believe Shannon Sharp may have done that on purpose? How do you butt dial an IG live?
He is like 55.
He knows how to work the internet.
So Michelle has a family member who I love dearly, the sweetest person in the world.
Nightcap, by the way, the name of that.
And she'll post like blurry Instagram photos and stuff. And we kind of have like a running joke that like, you know, she just doesn't know how to work her phone. You know what I mean? And she's very, very smart. She'll post a video that she thinks is a picture of them like, hey, take a smile. Mm-hmm. It's like, no, that was a video, not a picture. So like sometimes technology is just, it gets you. My grandfather butt dials me all the time.
Yeah.
All the time. And I'm like, Grandpa, are you okay? He's like, what do you mean? I'm like, you called me and you left a 2-minute message where it sounded like the phone was in your pocket. Are you okay? Yeah, I'm fine. My bad. I must have pocket dialed you. But he's also 88.
Right. Unc is 55 and he's well versed in social media.
Yeah, but
you just accidentally IG live? You just happen to just
make a mistake. Kind of hard to do. There's lots of buttons you have to press.
There's a lot of things you got to go through when it goes to IG Live.
You got
to
give a description. Yeah, you got to hit exactly. the go live button. I mean, it's a lot not just going a simple on. Touch a button and go.
Look, I almost feel like Shannon Sharp did that on purpose.
Well, I can't speak on that.
I'm starting to think this is intentional.
I mean, we're talking about him, and I'm pretty sure a lot of people listened to his podcast last night, so mission accomplished.
Got some numbers.
You know, now that I think about it, and I've deleted a few tweets. One was a video clapback at someone who will remain unnamed, and I did regret that.
All right.
I was pretty heated.
Yeah.
And upon further reflection, it wasn't a good look.
Yeah. Is there any tweets? There's a lot of tweets I wish I took back. I try to keep it professional for the most part on Twitter, but you know what I regret? Clapping back at the no-name losers on Twitter. The faceless avatars.
Yeah.
Where I'm just like, I'm clapping back at them. And I told one guy, I said, check my resume, homie. I was a little out of it. I told the dude, he was just saying something. I said, man, check my resume, homie. You clown. And
was it publicly available?
It wasn't, but I was ready to send him a screenshot and list every single thing that I've done in my life. And it was a bad look, though. It's a bad look. But we all regret something. I don't think Unk regrets that. I'm starting to think Unk doesn't regret that.
Well, he's at a status where bad press isn't even that bad.
No, it's not.
Right?
He's actually getting, like, people on YouTube, I'm sure, are like, yeah, Unk. Hell yeah, Unk. Like, they're applauding him.
So the street cred went up.
The street cred went through the roof. Through the roof. Did you see the live comments?
Oh, they were incredible. They were incredible.
And then wasn't there a fake? I thought it was real. But somebody came out and was like, hey, we've been hacked, blah, blah, blah. I thought we were going to go through that whole dog and pony show where I've been hacked on my Twitter account. Somebody hacked me.
Is it a worse look than the Paul Pierce video with the ladies?
See,
well, there's images there. So, like, this one leads it to the imagination, at least. Because once you have the visual, because Paul Pierce got fired right after that, right? So, like, Shannon's not going to. But had there been, that's...
What was Paul Pierce's image? Was there drugs involved? Were there drugs in it? It was just an overnight dancer, right?
Yeah, exactly, which is fine.
And, you know, they were, you know...
Single, right?
An overnight dancer. They,
he was saying things, too.
What's that one song?
Yeah.
What's that one song? And they twerking. Is she twerking? I just botched that. Anyway, let's just
clean it up, Ante.
I don't even know where to go with this.
There was a song back in the day.
So do you think this is good for him?
Well, ESPN hasn't come out and said anything. I'm sure First Take is discussing it. I'm sure Molly may be uncomfortable today. That's the other thing. Is he on First Take today? And if he did address it on First Take and nothing happened, nothing's going to happen.
You know, Mad Dog questioning him would be just hilarious. Chef's kiss.
Well, like, he didn't do anything wrong. That's the thing. Like, what did he do that was wrong? Seriously. Nothing.
No.
He's not cheating on anyone. He's single. Like, I don't understand.
But I do see all these videos of, like, people on Zooms, like, for work, and they're doing dumb things on there. And I see those circulated all the time. They're hilarious.
I think Molly's offer. I don't think they're going to adjust it off for a second.
If I were to label one tweet that should have been deleted in Bay Area sports history, I think the Cassie Bulkey tweet that was out there, remember that one?
Oh, yes.
Way back in the day? Yes. I'm going down the barrel here.
Yes, yes.
Oh, no, you guys are barren. It's the Ayesha Curry one that gets brought up the one where they blew the 3-1 lead, and she said it was rigged, and she knew it. Come on. That's the all-timer.
I forgot about that.
It's still alive today.
Hey, a lot of people felt like her, though. When LeBron went to the podium after game 4, the Warriors up 3-1, and LeBron was, you just can't call certain people certain, and say, oh, they go pop Draymond. Oh, they go get him.
So hard to take the high road.
What about Jed's tweet on Thanksgiving night? You think he regrets that?
That hit the video board?
Yeah.
Oh, he's got to regret that. Sorry, fans, for this performance that we had on Thanksgiving night.
Unacceptable.
Yeah. Undermining Jim Harbaugh.
Oh, jeez.
I actually regret it that night, speaking of which. That's when I was on my Snapchat days. Snapchat. Or Snapface, Snapchat. And there was a lot of traffic on the Bay Bridge Thanksgiving night. And I'm in the car, and I went berserk on Snapchat, ripping the 49ers. I regret that. I do regret that. There's a lot of things I regret. What do you guys regret? 888-957-9570. Now's your time to take back one thing. one tweet that your press sent on, one text that your press sent on, one IG live that your press sent on.
The things I usually regret are the things that I say in public settings that upset my wife later on.
Oh,
and she's just ready to kill me on the spot.
Yeah, see, I'm always thinking about the family member, so I watch what I say, Shasky.
Well, I'm always in, like, character, you know? I'm trying to have fun, and I just always take it too far.
Take it too far. I got
one
a little worried.
Joke too many.
We start throwing some jokes at Dudley. I was like, oh, we're getting close. We better dial it down.
Yeah, Dudley was ready to, like, strangle me.
Vontae, you think you're working a pregame show this year? Let me make a quick call here. Arson Judge is a good one. 650.
That's a great one.
Mobile text line. Does John Heyman regret